This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
Hack. All right, let's go. It's time to wrap up the year in politics on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. Thank you so much for being here. We're rounding out this last week on air for the year with shake-ups because we know you like to do this. You like to dive into different areas that we've covered, unpack it all, analyse it a bit. Before we move on, we've really got to process everything we've been through. Politically, it's going to be a little bit hard because there's been so much that's happened this year. Here's a bit of a taste.
Hack. Well, tonight's not the night that we wanted for the Liberal Party.
Australians have chosen a majority Labor government.
And it'll be a record-breaking parliament.
I was told that I didn't stand a chance.
I leave with the Greens now having the sole balance of power.
The Liberal Party is in a world of pain.
Triple J.
Yeah, I want to know how you're feeling about the state of politics in Australia and in the world right now. Like, if you compare it to how you were feeling this time last year, do you think that we're in a better position, a worse position? Also, what do you think the most rogue political moment of the year was? Was it the Prime Minister throwing around Dululu in Parliament? Was it Bob Katter screaming at that reporter who asked about his heritage? There are a lot of strange moments. What's your favourite? Message in 0439 757 555. But before we get any further into all of that, let's meet our shake-up experts. Our favourite political analysts are back with us. First, former Labor staffer, creator Alicia Aitken-Radburn. Hello.
Hello, Dave. So excited to chat to you.
Can you believe we had an election this year?
It feels so long ago. I've lived many lives since.
Is there one standout moment in politics this year? I know that's a hard one to put you on the spot, but apart from the election, is there one thing that you're like, wow, that's probably what I'll take away with me politically?
I guess it's in the front of my mind at the moment because it really hit yesterday, but the social media ban is massive. And I think that if I think this time next year, what's the landscape going to look like? What will that experience have been for young people?
Yeah, it's definitely uncharted territory. So I guess we don't know where we're going with it. I'm looking forward to diving into so much of the policy discussion, everything else with you. But we've got to meet our other shake-up guest. And it is, of course, former WA Liberal leader, Zach Kirkup. Zach, how are you?
Hello, Dave. Thanks very much for having me.
It's nice to have you back on. How's it been? Have you been watching all the chaos envelop the coalition over the past few months? What have you been up to?
Just from far away over here in the West, seeing it all unfold. It's been a real time.
Yeah, I can imagine. Has there been one big moment for you politically this year, good or bad?
Look, politically, I'm just Pauline Hanson cooking Barnaby Joyce's steak, yes, on a George Foreman grill. Was just occupying my mind rent-free at the moment.
Yeah.
Over and over again on that very small table. I don't understand what was going
on. It
looked
good, though. I think it looked good.
I didn't think it looked bad. And I started to question my workplace lunch practices. I was like, well, what else is possible on a sandwich bread?
This is true. This is true.
Yeah. Would you ever try it, Zach? You're
never
a fancy guy.
I'm a fancy guy.
Her staffer has been cooking sausages today. She's just rolling. It's going to become like a new TikTok series.
It could be. I mean, the smells within the office must be a bit intense at times.
Better than tuna.
Yeah, true. Better than tuna in the microwave. All right, we've got to get into all of the politics of this year because, like I said, there's so much. So let's jump into the deep end, start with some of the bigger issues, polarising moments that happened this year.
Hack.
Gen Z is the most progressive generation.
Young people particularly are not getting their information from traditional news sources anymore.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
Great to be here, Abby.
Hundreds of thousands of people are going to vote for the first time.
Massive generational gap in wealth in this country.
Younger Australians just took one look at Peter Dutton and ran the other way.
One Nation had all the policies that I could support.
Our politics in recent years has become quite divided. Charlie Kirk, in my opinion, was someone who really tried to mend that divide.
Australia first!
Two groups from opposing sides of the immigration debate.
It's a sign that people aren't going to put up with it anymore.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's definitely not been a boring year in politics, has it? Like, this year was the year influencers, creators entered Parliament in a very real way. They entered the political discourse in a big way as well. Have you felt things becoming more polarised when you talk to your family about politics or your friends? Can you talk to your loved ones about politics? Let me know. Message in 0439 757 555. It is the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. We're breaking down the year in politics. I'm joined by former Labor staffer Alicia Aitken-Radburn and former WA Liberal leader Zach Kirkup. Alicia, was this the year politics officially took notice of young Australians? What do you reckon?
I definitely think we've seen a concerted effort, and more than a concerted effort, like I know there is firsthand, there is resourcing in the PMO to engaging new media, engaging young voters.
And PMO, I think Prime Minister's office.
Prime Minister, Hackland over here.
That's how much of insiders they are. They speak in acronyms.
So, yeah, in the Prime Minister's office, there has been attention placed on engaging new media, engaging podcasters, and speaking to young voters. And I have to say, I think that they have done a really fantastic job, and I think it is broadly a good thing for democracy and just speaking to young people. I do see that on some of those podcasts, like some of, I guess, the journalistic push, we're not getting the same questioning as we're getting from, like, your Sarah Ferguson on 7:30 Report. And so I do think that there is probably, maybe in years to come, we will see a little bit, see our Prime Minister held to account a little bit more.
Okay, so you think maybe it could go in this direction for a while and then there might be some kind of bounce back? I don't know. Like, it definitely, the strategy of engaging podcasters and creators and getting them really involved in the political discussion, like, definitely worked for Labor. Like, obviously, it paid off in really big ways. Zach, how do you feel about leaders leaning into new media, leaning into podcasts, creators to get their message across?
Well, it makes sense that you need to meet your voters where they are. And the reality is that media landscape, as you well know, Dave, is increasingly sort of diverse in the offering to young people. Triple J and ABC keep up with that very well, I think, but there are not the same level of traditional sort of outlets engaging in the same way. And they start to leave young people behind, young people leave them behind. And I think if you start to see political parties that only focus on those more traditional media outlets, they will lose voters. I mean, we saw that with the Coalition's vote at the last federal election. We continue to do work. We've continued to do poorly for millennial votes alone since 2016. It just continued to slide to, you know, nearly 22% down, up from 38% in 2016 down to 22% for the Coalition, whereas Labor has either increased that or stabilised. We are losing young people, and I think there's a mixture of us not engaging with the new media landscape as well as not engaging where young people on issues that matter to young people.
So basically, Susan Lee needs to go on Happy Hour with Lucy and Nikki. She's got to become a punter.
And she might, to be honest. Who knows? I mean, this is actually a good opportunity to remind everyone that the Prime Minister was asked this on Triple J Breakfast in July by Concetta Caristo.
Can we ask you, while you're here, will you commit to coming back to chat with the journalist versus two comedians, Dave Marchese, in the next month to speak about, you know, those key issues?
Oh, sure. Always happy to have a chat.
All right. No luck yet. We've been trying. We're going to pick it up again next year, though, and hopefully we'll be able to get the Prime Minister on to answer some questions. We're everything. We're new media, old media, podcast, radio shows, socials. What do you reckon, Alicia? Like, do you think in terms of the Liberal Party, and I want to start with you, Alicia, on this one and then get to Zach, can the party turn this abandonment around of, like, young people just leaving in droves?
We've spoken about this recently, Dave, and I'm just so confused, as I think many people are, about what's happening with the Liberal Party. I think if I was to predict it after the federal election, I was thinking, okay, once the Liberal Party come together and they recalibrate, they'll be figuring out how they regain those teal seats in metro areas, and it has just not gone the way that I thought. Here we are, we're rejecting net zero. We are, the next discussion we're going to be having is on immigration, and it feels like the Liberal Party is moving to the right. And so I guess that's a good segue for me to ask Zach Kirkup. How are you feeling about being a Liberal member at the moment?
I love these bits when Alicia like takes over the show and she's like, and here's my... No, no, it's good.
This is a shake-up with Alicia Aiken-Radburn and Dave and I just joining you.
It's the question I was going to ask. Zach, what do you reckon?
Oh, look, I mean, I don't think Susan Ley is cutting through to anybody, let alone to young voters. I think the Liberal Party needs to consider its position.
So do you think she'll last?
I don't. No. I don't think she's going to be the
breaking news.
I don't think it's that breaking for anybody out there, really. I mean, and I think it's very good that we have a leader in place, and she's trying her best. But I just think she's not cutting through.
So who's it going to be in the long run? Do you reckon?
I'd like to see Andrew Hastie as the leader of the Liberal Party. I think that would be good for us in the West, at the very least. And
the Western Australia is writing the article now.
I do think that. I mean, then the reason I say that is because we do need to have our positions on things, and the problem that I think we're having in the Liberal Party at the moment, more than anything else, crisis or otherwise, as to our very existence, is that people don't know our positions on things.
Right.
I would rather that people know our position on things and they disagree with it or they debate us, and that's the sign of a healthy democracy.
Okay, so you're kind of saying that there's not that much of a difference between the major parties at this point, and people just don't know the positions of the Liberal Party on a range of issues. Do you think that's behind this rise in One Nation that we're seeing, Zach?
I do think that. I mean, I say this as a moderate within my party, mind you, right? And I mean that what we should have is we must stand for something. The people of Australia elect politicians to have positions on things. And at the moment, I think what we're seeing this rise in One Nation's vote is because I could pretty clearly talk to anyone on the street and we could all discuss. We know what Pauline Hanson and One Nation stand for. We might not like it, but we've got a pretty good clue about where they are on certain issues. I don't know if you could have the same answers to questions if you talk to them about the Liberal Party.
Okay, we've got a lot of messages on this on the text line. Someone says, Susan Ley, show us the policies. Another person says, One Nation, baby, Pauline for PM. Someone else, this year showed me the two-party system has failed the people. And another person says, the overall behaviour of Australian politicians is like watching a bunch of schoolyard bullies, a far cry from any state of professionalism. Alicia, what about stuff happening overseas? Because obviously Donald Trump, his presidency has overshadowed global politics. We had the assassination of Charlie Kirk this year. How much do you think those events have influenced politics here?
I think it has definitely influenced politics, maybe less so in Canberra or in Parliament House, but more so I see it on social media. And this has been escalating, it feels like, year on year, but we do seem to just be becoming more tribal. And it's probably, if I was to talk about what I find most concerning in the kind of social landscape, it would be that tribalism. And I know it's really hard because you sort of look out there and I don't want to be like kumbaya, my lord, but I do think that we need to be treating each other with more respect, with more compassion. And I know just on an individual level, I really try and retain my friendships and how I treat people in my life. I don't have to agree with people on every single issue. But I do think that it's important for us to treat each other with respect. And I think the assassination of Charlie Kirk really rattled a lot of people to their core.
Zach, what do you think? Do you agree with that sentiment? Do you think there is less patience for differences of political views in Australia than there was a few years ago? How do you see things like playing out overseas impacting us here?
I do think I am continually surprised about that sort of the division that occurs in the UK and in the US, and seeing that sort of being transported over to Australia. I see that, to be frank, Dave, probably a bit more in that sort of Victorian context. That's my impression from outside over here in the West, that it seems to be a bit more of a hotbed of that division over there in Victoria. But you know, that has unfortunately also now, you know, resulted in things like Pauline Hanson doing that burqa stunt in the Senate again for the second time. But that's only seeking to reinforce the sense of division, the stoking the flames on immigration and things like that, and she's trying to get ahead on that. But I think that that is the result of a society where we think it's fine to demonise people like that. And that's a far cry from what I believe in as classical liberals. I think it's a far cry from what the Labor Party would conduct themselves every day of the week.
Well, I think that's the challenge for the Liberal Party then, because I feel like the Liberal Party is gravitating towards One Nation, and I feel as a major party, I think that Liberal Party members need to be stewards of their party and not turn it into kind of what we're seeing in the UK. You'll enlighten me. Who's that, like, really? Who's that far-right guy in...
Farage.
Yeah, and that's what I fear will happen in Australia.
There are a lot of people on the text line now saying the two-party system is broken and it doesn't work here, and young people are showing that they're not supporting that. I'm interested to get your takes on this, both of you, because you're passionate about your respective parties. Like, do you think that's true, Alicia? Like, we saw Peter Dutton, Adam Bandt both lose their seats. Do you think that could be a sign of things to come, that nothing is safe when it comes to young voters?
I think it was definitely surprising to me, particularly that Adam Bandt lost his seat. I have to be honest, if you're on my algorithm, if you're on my Instagram account, Adam Bandt was the next Prime Minister, which is so interesting to me because
was
obviously...
Is that your algorithm too, Zach?
That's right. Shockingly, no.
We're living in very different online spaces. But I think it goes to me what that showed me when I was watching the federal election results come in and it became clear that, no, Adam was not going to become the Prime Minister and he was in fact going to lose his seat, that our algorithms and what we're seeing online, we are really living in these little political bubbles, and Australia is far broader. And so I actually think it is the responsibility for our politicians to really look at all Australians and speak to all Australians.
We've got a lot of messages coming through. Someone says, my family's never been so divided. I believe the Liberal Party is done and the rise of One Nation tells you people are sick of how things are. Another person, our two-party system has never worked. Nothing changes. We need more choice, that person says. Someone else, we've lost the ability to debate. It's very much my way or the highway in politics at the moment. And someone else just says Pauline is both irrelevant and noisy. There's been support for Pauline on the text line, Pauline Hanson. There's also people who are dead against her. I got to ask about this expenses stuff. I'm sorry. And I mean, I asked Alicia about the future of the Liberal Party. So maybe I'll start with Zach on this one. Zach, Annika Wells, the sports minister, being obliterated over expenses this week. Do you think she'll survive?
I am curious about when she'll go from embattled minister to former minister. I think it's not that far off if we keep tracking this through. I mean, it's sort of spread now. The contagion of expenses concerns have spread. I mean, ultimately, we're going into December, so people will sort of switch off a bit, and expenses for Annika Wells will probably be behind us. I think she's probably lucked it out in terms of the news cycle that we're in. But, you know, I don't think anyone wants... I think people need to accept that politicians travel. And politicians should have some time with their family. And if they go to events with their family, it probably makes for a better, more well-rounded politician to represent people in Parliament.
What about a $1,700 dinner in Paris? Does that make for a much better-rounded politician?
I think that's where this sort of balance of understanding what might be within the rules but what's actually acceptable to people, you know, in the pub test, inverted commas, whether or not that's actually the case. Because... you know, we live in a society, I think, that doesn't necessarily see politicians as being high-value assets to to where we are as a country. And so any dollar that a politician earns or spends is a dollar too much. Ultimately, what the minister has there, unfortunately, is probably gone very much to the edge of what was allowed, for sure, but not by the rules, but way, way beyond what people would deem as acceptable.
Yeah, Alicia, I mean, I guess because it's coming up to Christmas, there is this cost of living crisis everyone's been living in for years. Maybe it's hitting a bit harder right now.
Oh, absolutely. But I think there's sort of two issues at play. You've got I'm curious about who's backgrounding on Annika Wells, because she is being absolutely slammed. And interesting timing with the social media ban coming into effect.
That wasn't the Prime Minister's office, but it was someone who's an aspirant. Surely.
But it's really interesting, because if you look at the list of expenditure, it's nothing crazy. Like, I think she's 18th on the list. There are politicians who are spending more than her. So I think you've got the Annika Wells situation. But then I think the second thing, in going to the cost of living piece, Dave, is really, do we want to reevaluate what the terms of reference are, what the rules of play are? Do we think, like, for instance, like, This one's controversial because I've seen traditional media say, no, it's completely fine that politicians are flying business class. I mean,
well,
if
we
I'm...
had David Pocock on the other day being like, domestic business class flights, except maybe if you're coming from WA or the territory, maybe
like,
we should
we
be rethinking that stuff.
Even international, like I would be looking, I think
Chuck
it's how we manage...
economy.
I think it's how we manage our household budgets, right? And I think that's where the pub test comes into it. I think that people, I think Australians want our politicians to be looking at looking at their budget like we look at ours. And if you're looking at a $30,000 ticket, maybe just slum it in economy.
Yeah, we've got some messages. Someone says politicians get paid far too much. They can afford their own travel costs, not the taxpayers. And someone else, the Liberals and One Nation are not the answer to solve our current challenges. All right, let's quickly turn to some of the big policy debates this year.
Hack. Is your nuclear policy dead?
Our energy policy will be under review.
They're walking away from climate action.
We're not pursuing net zero. We are pursuing energy affordability.
5% deposits for first home buyers.
This program is going to open up home ownership to 10,000 Australians every year.
The government should be looking for ways to reduce prices.
Social media is doing harm to our kids. I'm calling time on it.
They voted to cut student debt by 20%.
We have declared Iran's ambassador to Australia persona non grata.
Australia recognises the state of Palestine.
On Triple J.
Yeah, a lot of big policy discussions this year. This is the Shake Up on Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, getting into the year in politics with former WA Liberal leader Zach Kirkup, ex-Labor staffer Alicia Aitken-Radburn. Zach, what do you reckon of the government's performance post-election? Like, are you impressed with what they've achieved, whether it's housing policy, the social media ban that Alicia was talking about, nature laws? It feels like they have pushed quite a bit through.
Yeah, I have been quite impressed by the Prime Minister and what's happened with the government. Ultimately, we should want the government to be successful, particularly after its first year in election, because it means the country's successful. The thing that really has brought it home for me, though, Dave, wasn't so much domestic policy, although I think the social media ban is an exceptional move, was actually the reception the Prime Minister, Defence Minister and Foreign Minister got with Donald Trump.
And it was a successful trip.
It was massively successful, particularly because we know how, you know, unstable at times the US can be with how it approaches foreign policy, particularly even with its allies off the back of the tariffs. And over here for the West, the AUKUS submarine deal is a big deal for defence projects here in WA, and they back that in. And the Prime Minister, to his credit, and you know, I don't have a lot of time for Kevin Rudd, but did well as the ambassador, Australian ambassador to the United States, and pulled off something really remarkable that universally was praised for extending Australia's relationship at a time when it could have easily gone sideways. Yeah. And I think that to me makes me proud as an Australian when you see Australia do well, Liberal or Labor, do well on the international stage.
Because there was a lot of, will it happen, won't it happen, pressure on the government to make this meeting in the United States progress, get Donald Trump in the room, and then it did happen. And yeah, as you say, Zach, there was a lot of praise for the Prime Minister and how he handled that situation. Alicia, I mean, we've talked about net zero before and the coalition now off it and saying we're not really committing to net zero. The question I have for you, though, is it more damaging for the government that they have targets in place, but they're not on track to meet them? Because that's what we found out recently.
Oh, I think that... I think the government clearly is committed to climate action, and I think that's what Australians want to see. For me, I feel like it's opposite week with Zach praising the federal government.
What's going on here?
I'm happy to call whatever the play how I see it.
For me, I do have some issues around domestic policy. I think we are still just tinkering around the edges with housing policy.
So what would you like to see? What's some of the bolder moves that you reckon we should be seeing?
We got to get rid of negative gearing. We got to get rid of the capital gains tax discount. I know it won't happen, so it's that's the frustration.
Zach.
But if we really want,
I think you need to get as many people to be building houses as possible. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, that too. I just don't think that we are doing enough to even like shift the dial slightly on what we are seeing out there. Like, it is just wild, and then that has flow on effects to other systems. Like, where I would really like to see some more action is mental health. I think that there is so much. We know that we've got a mental health crisis on our hands, and we've had an NDIS review that looks to how we can support people with complex mental health issues better. And I'm just waiting for some movement there, because it feels like there's been a lot written, there's been a lot talked about, and now it's time for the federal government to sit down with the state government and actually figure out a reform plan to how we can look after people better.
Zach, go ahead.
No. I was just off the back of that. I mean, I think what really bothers me is I think that we've all taken our eye off the ball with closing the gap.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is it was, you know, there was the issue du jour when we were all pre-voice referendum. Everyone was talking about what was going on with the Indigenous and First Nations community across our country. And I feel like, unfortunately, it's just become not a priority. And the reality is that if it was, you know, if we talk about it in houses in a street, the houses of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the country are on fire, and people aren't paying any attention to it.
And we talked about this around the voice referendum, Zach, and the fear that this would happen, that if the referendum was unsuccessful, that these issues would be off the agenda for a very, very long time. We've got messages coming through. Someone says climate change will cost us trillions. Walking back from net zero would lock that in. Another person says demand is going through the roof with 5% deposits. You don't fix a problem by increasing demand without supply. This is idiotic. Okay, we have a very, very tiny amount of time left. We've been talking about the serious stuff. There's some also lighter, stranger things that have happened in politics this year.
Hack to the stigmas of Australia.
Don't say that, because I punch blokes in the mouth for saying that.
They are Delulu with no Salulu, Mr. Speaker.
After wearing a burqa into the Senate late yesterday.
I'm censured.
There'll be a Pauline Hanson sandwich maker next.
Order! Stinking extinction salmon. Extinction salmon.
On Triple J.
Extinction salmon. Oh, it's the shake-up. I'm Dave Marchese, joined by Alicia Aitken-Radburn, Zach Kirkup. We're talking about 2025 in politics, breaking it all down. Some of the weirder, stranger moments in politics this year. Alicia, any particular moment that caught you? I mean, we talked about the sandwich press moment, but what about Bob Catter going after that reporter, who is a friend of mine, by the way, I know him.
I mean, I just think everyone looked at that and were absolutely perplexed. I think everyone's been kind of waiting for that next Bob Catter moment, but it wasn't as charming as, but I'm not going to hear anything about it because, you know, it wasn't that charming. I also did like the feature of Senator Payman's speech in Parliament where she's like appealing to young voters like Gen Z. But I swear to God, like, it gives me my cringe. It's a bit cringe. Zach. And I'm just waiting. Next speech is going to be 6-7.
Probably, actually. I mean, we had Anthony Albanese saying Delulu in Parliament. That was another interesting moment. Zach, just quickly, I mean, I'm surprised when you were in WA politics, you weren't using more of this Gen Z slang, alpha slang.
I've never been very cool, Dave. That's why. I mean, the thing that really got me was everyone losing their mind over the Joy Division T-shirt from the Prime Minister out of the plane.
Yeah.
Give me a break. The poor bloke had a massive flight from the US, just bagged the president and got a massive deal for defence in Australia, and everyone's given him, you know...
It was your party. Your party was doing that. It was Susan Lee.
Why do you think he's backing Andrew Hastie?
Yeah, why do you think I'm backing Andrew Hastie? That's right. We'll get around him.
That's so interesting. Yeah, it does feel like bizarro world, does it, in this shake-up with some of the takes. But, there was a lot of interesting stuff. We had Senator Sarah Hanson-Young holding up that stinky salmon in Parliament. All the meltdowns. I don't know. Alicia, do you like to hear politicians engaging with youth in different ways? Like, even if it is cringe, do you think it is effective?
I think we do need a bit of levity in politics. Like, it can all be a little bit glum and boring. And so I think that's why, like, going back to the beginning, new media and podcasts, it has been nice to hear politicians engage, try something new. So yeah. I'm pro a little bit of cringe.
Okay, you're pro a bit of cringe. We've got messages coming through. Big support for both of your takes, I must say. Someone says, thank you, Zach, for mentioning the recent neglect around closing the gap about time. Another person saying, yes, Alicia, I agree with all the priorities that you outlined there. So there we go, across the board, very balanced. In three words, both of you, we don't have time. We've got to wrap up in a minute. But what do you think the priority should be for next year? Alicia, what's the one thing you'd like to see?
Ooh, childcare.
Childcare. Okay. Zach, what do you think it needs to be?
Close the gap.
Close the gap. Okay. Right. So we'll see.
I thought we had 3 days.
Yeah.
Housing and mental health are my other
three
two.
Okay.
Words,
not three things,
three
mate.
Words.
Yeah, so it was three words, but yeah. I give you another two, Zach. What else
Very
do you
ambitious.
Think?
I think housing affordability. And I think we need to, well, housing affordability and cost of living,
and
I guess.
Cost of living, yeah, okay. All right.
I guess.
Guys, we've got to wrap it up. Thank you so much for coming on. Alicia Aitken-Radvan, always a pleasure.
Always, Dave.
And Zach Kirkup, thank you so much for your time.
Dave, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to spend my third shake-up with Alicia Aitken-Radvan at the end
It's been great, and join us tomorrow for our final shake-up of the year where we wrap everything up. I can't wait. It will be a lot of fun. Catch you then.